Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Thursday, June 1st, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
I was going to say April 1st, but I was going to see if you were paying any attention. But
I'm paying attention. Maybe. I assure you I'm paying attention. Every month it rolls around on the 1st, I'm paying attention. The rest of the time, probably not, but on the first day of each month, yes, I'm paying attention.
Well, when we were little kids and we would miss April 1st, you know, for April 2nd, or it wasn't so much that we missed April 1st. We enjoyed April 1st so much that we wanted to carry it on for another day or so. And we would always say,
April and then you got
Fools
spanked
for next year. So, you know, we'd get our little April Fools in for next year. Mm-hmm. So you never know when that is coming your way. Anyway, gold today, you know, it struggled. Had a low of 1260. Struggled back to 1270, and we're still right now. We're at 1268.60, down a buck. Okay.
Yeah.
Why did my screen just go white? Silver's. Maybe. Silver's down 2 cents today at 1739. Had a high of 1743. Platinum was hit big today, down $16, 936. Palladium was up 8 at $829. And it's really interesting. It's just like palladium is in its own little world. Doesn't matter what the rest of the metals does. It goes up, it goes down, and certainly not in tandem with the other white or the other precious metals. So kind of interesting. Not sure it means anything, but, you know, when it has its own little trend, it's certainly reacting, I'm sure, to the announcement by Mr. Trump today, but we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. And his little announcement also made the dollar a little stronger, up 0.25 at 97.22. Crude oil was down 0.21 at 48.11. And the paper markets today, they were triple digits. They started getting weaker leading up to Trump's announcement about the Paris Accord, and they, during his speech, they did an abrupt turnaround. So we have the Dow up 134 points, 21,142. The NASDAQ is up 48, 6,246. The S&P is up 18, 2,430. 10-year yield was up 2.02. at 2.22%. The euro, again, reflected the dollar decline, was down 0.26 at 1.12, still holding that level, 1.12. European and Asian markets, you know, just nothing really going on over there. The announcement about the Paris Accord, Trump did decide to make a formal withdrawal, or he made the announcement that we would pull out of the act. And I have to remember that Obama, that was a executive order. It didn't go through, you know, the legal channels. It was an executive order, so therefore Trump can back out of it. However, under its terms, and I'm not sure how this works, but it's not going to happen immediately. I don't know, you know, maybe because it didn't go through Congress, maybe he can, since it was just an executive order, but technically, supposedly, he can't withdraw. It's going to take years. Which,
well, here's
I don't
a quote.
Get that.
Here's a quote that says, apparently from Trump, says the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, thank you, but begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or an entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers, so we are getting out.
So he's not withdrawing.
If he says we're getting out right now, but he's planning to get back in, he's planning to renegotiate.
So he's not really out. From what I understand, that he can't technically withdraw. He must wait until November 2019 to formally submit his bid to quit. It will take another year after that before the U.S. is actually out. So,
so what are they going to do in the meantime? While everybody knows we're going to quit, but we're not out.
That's what it doesn't make.
I mean, this is like having a divorce and you keep living together or something like that.
I don't want to leave the house. I don't want
to get out of the house.
It's like I don't want to live with you, but I don't want a divorce either. I don't know. So they're going to renegotiate, but he can't, and I don't understand what happens if he just says it's done.
Here's another quote that may be helpful. It says, as of today, this is Trump, as of today, the United States will cease all implementation.
That's money.
The non-binding Paris Accord and the draconian financial and economic burden the agreement imposes on our country. All right, we may not be out of it yet, but we ain't in it either. I mean, it's okay, we're still there, but we ain't paying. You understand?
Which I believe the real reason why this isn't being continued is I heard that it's going to cost almost $1 trillion. Again, that 10-year limit, $85 billion a year to the U.S.? I don't think the U.S. has it. And I do agree that he would rather spend that $1 trillion in his tax cuts or the repeal and replace Obamacare and so forth. So, you know, he can't. You know, he's spending too many trillions of dollars, and this in 10 years would be almost $1 trillion. So, but it's funny because China said they would only begin reducing its emissions by about 2030. India said it would only reduce the carbon intensity of its economy, meaning the nation's emissions would continue to rise. The U.S. pledged to cut greenhouse gas emissions by at least 26%. My point is, if nobody's going to do anything until 2030 except give them money, what's this whole thing about?
Giving people money.
Giving people money.
Yeah. Income redistribution.
So, I mean, what's the whole point of this deal? I mean, if nobody's going to do anything for until 2030, you know, and what India's going to do is just, you know, their emissions are going to continue to rise. So the only one that has to really do anything is the U.S. They just want the money. Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, he had favored remaining in the agreement. Steve Bannon, he supported the exit, as does Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. Trump's chief economic advisor, Gary Cohen, had discussed the possibility of changing the U.S. carbon reduction targets instead of pulling out of the deal completely. Jared Kushner thinks his son-in-law thought the deal was bad but would like to see its emissions targets be changed. His daughter, Ivanka Trump, preferred to stay. This is the funny one. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke said Wednesday in Alaska that he had yet to read what the actual Paris Agreement is and would have to read it before weighing in on the situation. I can't believe these guys admit, hey, I didn't read it yet, so...
Why not? Congress has admitted that. I mean, Nancy Pelosi came up. You have to vote for it. And then you can find out what's in it.
That's the only thing.
I don't know. There's nothing unusual about not reading what they're voting for or considering.
Perhaps it isn't unusual that they're not reading it. What's unusual is that they're being honest in saying that.
Well, that happens. There's a certain amount of randomness. You catch them in an honest moment from time to time. Apparently, people in positions of authority are calling the 1-800 psychic hotline.
Oh.
And they tell them whether to vote for something or vote against it. It's a lot easier than actually taking the trouble to read the documents yourself.
I wanted to talk about the ADP reports, but this kind of plays into hand from what we're talking about. And there was a report. There's a lady who does radio program, Cheryl Atkinson, and she reported on the congressional fundraising corruption and how they buy top spots on powerful committees. And there was a report by Issue One. It exposes a secretive money system in which members of Congress buy top spots on the most powerful committees. The new report, The Price of Power, exposes how members of Congress serve as cash cows for their party's political machinery. Now, I don't think this is anything really new, but there's some things in here that I was just sort of surprised at. Insiders report have parties have similar systems of dues that members have to pay every 2 years by raising money directly for the party. That's called dialing for dollars. And by giving some of their campaign funds to the party and to colleagues facing tough races, and how much they raise determines who gets ahead. So they're buying their promotions. Republicans have six-figure party dues, but it takes more to make the ranks of leadership. And the Democrats, it's just the same. So how much does a committee chairmanship cost? If you want to be the chairman of a major committee in Congress and you're a Republican, you've got to deliver $1.2 million to the Republican National Congressional Committee. Democrats, it's about the same thing. Today, besides the $1.2 million required of, quote-unquote, a committee chairman, Republicans who chair secondary B committees are expected to raise $875,000 in dues. The top Republican in the House, a speaker, has to raise $20 million. The number two majority leader is $10 million. Such details held tightly for so many years come from some of the 180 former public officials who belong to this Issues One's Bipartisan Reformers Caucus. So, you know, there are some of these older ones that are, you know, saying, hey, this is what goes on. Former Congresswoman Connie Morella, she says a member of Congress devotes almost one-third of every day to raising money. Everyone remembers Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle. He says people leave on Thursday, they come back on Tuesday, and they try to govern on Wednesday. So there isn't any, and a third of that time is raising, and a third of those days is raising money. And the question was asked, Cheryl asked, how are the members told how much money that they ought to raise? It's by the committees, usually in the spring. And they just did that just a month ago. They come out with a quota. And it basically says that if you're a chairman of a regular committee, it's so many dollars. And if you're a chairman of an A committee, an exclusive committee, it's even higher. So if you have enough money in your campaign account, you can just write a check. And if you don't have enough money, you have to go over in what's called dialing for dollars. You sit in a...
And what do the people get in return? Yeah. Suppose I'm the chairman of the...
positions. They get, well, you're right.
No, it's not just the position. Home. What I'm trying to get to is who are you going to dial for dollars?
Well,
it's not going to be the employees
exactly.
In your department. It's going to be whatever special interests are being governed by your department.
But it's just not
and you're going to govern them, call them up and say, listen, I need another $100,000 to be chairman, and do you suppose you could help out? And if you don't, I'm going to make sure that bill you wanted passed in Congress isn't going to be passed. This is a formula for bribery.
It's worse than that. I mean, it's like they actually give you a list. You sit in a little booth. They give you a list. You call people that they don't know. And again, you ask them for money. You tell them that there's some event coming up and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Please donate $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000 for this dinner. And you're right. You see people advance to committee chairmanships and into leadership positions based on how much they spend during the workday, taxpayer expense, making calls, and shaking down the special interests. And you're absolutely correct. They're dedicated to the ones
that get the money. This is bribery. This is a system that makes political favors. They are available for money to anybody. If you got the money, the Congress has the time. If you don't have the money, buzz off. We don't need to hear from you, except maybe every couple of years when we run for re-election. Then we'll tell you how much we really care about you. But the truth is, the only people that have much influence in Congress are people who have significant amount of money to give to congressmen, which are essentially in return for what? They're not giving that money because they believe the congressman is a paragon of good government. They're given it. They want something in return. Quid pro quo. We'll give you $100,000, but you got to get this bill passed, or you have to get this criteria inserted into the bill. It's into a bill that's going to be passed here in the next little while. Yeah. And that's the way it's doing. I mean, I've said for years, it's the political campaign contribution laws that are the foundation for the corruption that takes place in Congress. You should not, no one should be able to give money to any congressman, any senator, if you can't vote for them, you can't give them any money. All right? And that means corporations can't vote. They don't get to make these things. It's going to have to be individuals. How much money can you get from individuals and only in your district, whatever that district is? If you're running from the 117th congressional district in Texas, you can only take political campaign contributions from individuals within that district. And I don't care how much you get. Ross Perot might be in that district. And if Ross Perot wants to give you $1 billion, fine. But it's got to be reported before you can spend it. It's got to go up on the website. And they've got to say, well, we got $1 billion for Ross. That's evidence that you were in Ross's pocket. All right? But if you got the money, if he wants to give you $1 billion, I don't have a problem with that. But the political campaign contribution laws, you can't be taking money from outside your district, from industries that aren't located in your district and so on. You can only get from your own people. And under those circumstances, you would be compelled to represent the best interests of your constituents, whatever they were. If you were in a district where they had logging, you would do what was best for loggers or you wouldn't get any money. If you were in a district where they pumped a lot of oil, you would represent the best interests of the oil business in Congress. All right? I don't have a problem with representing those interests so long as they are located within your district. If you're a senator, you can only take money from your state. Nothing from out of state, just from your state. Under those circumstances, we might have a Congress that actually behaved in an honorable manner and just a bunch of treasonous whores.
But you know what's amazing is this is all a joke in Washington. The big joke in Washington is that the Financial Services Committee is called the Cash Committee, not because it deals with finances, but just being on it allows you to raise so much money from the lobbyists and bankers that it's an ATM machine and the cash just pours in. And after the recession, the Republican chairman of the committee, Jeb Hensarling, he raised $10 million and half of it from finance, insurance, and real estate interests. And he transferred $8.6 million of it to the National Republican Campaign Committee and the other House Republicans. The committee's lead Democrat, Maxine Waters, she raised $3.7 million, one quarter of it from finance, insurance, and real estate donors, and she transferred almost $800,000 of that to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. So now you know why these people in these leadership roles in these areas, how they get there. You know, it's more money.
We're not running a Congress, we're running a country club. If you want to get in, you got to pay. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as common sense voices of integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to continue running that special, $485. That's $485, 90% silver quarters, $25 face value. And again, they're quarters in addition to a 1/10th ounce American Gold Eagle. It includes all your shipping costs for the total of $485. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we are going to, we want to encourage you to send us questions. You can send them to my email address, the discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, or you can also send us questions directly from the website. There's a place there where you can respond, send me an email, so you can do it there too. So we do encourage you to email us any questions. If you don't want to call us, you prefer to send us a question, or if there's a topic that you would like us to touch on, please send it to us. And there's so many things going on. We only have an hour. The hour goes by very quickly, and we don't run a lot of commercials, so we can get more information out to you. So, and again, I appreciate your support, because your support by purchasing from Discount Gold and Silver is what pays for these programs and other programs that I support. I don't run a million commercials to where I get paid from commercials to pay for the programs. It's you become a part of the program with your support. I don't do money bombs. I don't ask for donations. I get donations. People are very generous, and they'll send us donations, but I don't ask for it. But we're very appreciative. So I want to thank you and become a part of the program. And you help us by supporting Discount Gold and Silver each time you make an order. And so we're very competitive. I do online shopping all the time. We're right in there. There's probably one company online that I can't beat, and he sells at wholesale. And I know what happens to companies when they sell at wholesale. He won't buy your product back if you didn't buy it from him. And so there's a lot of things there that tells me, you know, that's just not the normal way to do business. When you're in the gold and silver business. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Before Al talks about someone that I dislike, I just wanted to remind, the ADP came out today, or yesterday. That's the private payroll report that comes out, you know, days before the government's, the Bureau of Labor Statistics release their non-farm payrolls. They're projecting 253,000, that their private payrolls increased by 253,000. Now, everyone is sort of expecting the Bureau of Labor's numbers to come in about 176,000. So there really is a big discrepancy there. And I can't recall such a time when there's been such big spreads between ADP and governments every month for so long. Usually once in a while there's a hit and miss and so forth, but you know usually they're fairly close. But there's been some big discrepancies lately, and I think construction is what led the big gain, along with mining. I think they gained like 3,000 jobs. So, and the part that was interesting is leisure and hospitality, especially, you know, as weather has been fairly warm, there was actually a pretty big decline of 11,000. So, It's and later on we're going to talk about job losses, and there's a lot of job losses everywhere, Al.
Well, I'll look, have to look in the creases in my couch. Maybe we've got a couple of jobs down there with the quarters and the half dollars or whatever it could be. Got an article here from CNBC. Soros says European Union is now in an existential crisis, surrounded by hostile powers. And now, before we get into this, I don't know how many people are listening to this program who understand what the definition of existential is, but it is bizarre. I've heard the term since I was a kid. I've heard the term, I'm sure, back when I was in high school back in the 1960s. And what does it mean? I don't know. It's always so bizarre. It's so imprecise. And in fact, someone is complaining about it. He says, please explain the usage of the word existential. I hear it frequently on the news and on talk shows. Dictionaries use existence in their definitions of the word. And the problem with that is you can't use a word to define the word. All right? It's a fundamental principle of, I think it's lexicography, which is a science of defining words. I may be mistaken about lexicography, but you can't define the color red. The color red. You can't do that. You have to have something else. There has to be another way to define the term red that doesn't use the word red as part of the definition. And it's the same thing pretty much here. They define existential as involving existence. And it always just leaves people confused. And this is not my answer. This is an answer from one of the sources on the internet. It says the adjective existential is often defined as of or relating to existence. However, as you point out, that doesn't really explain the meaning of the existential in most contexts. So they come at it and they give us three definitions: existential threat, existential questions, existential crisis. And they say the first phrase, existential threat, is used in texts or discussions about politics, usually politics in the Middle East. In this context, existential is being used literally. An existential threat is a threat to a people's existence or survival. Okay, I get that. Existential threat, it's threatening your existence. If you are subject to an existential threat, that makes sense to me. Second phrase, existential questions, refers to existentialism, a 20th century philosophy, all right, concerning how and whether life has meaning and why we exist. All right, that makes a certain amount of sense, but what does existential questions and the philosophy have to do with existential threat involving whether you're going to live or die? It seems to me that they are broadening this definition. And the third phase, existential crisis also refers to existentialism, but is often used in a humorous or sarcastic way. So an existential threat is something that threatens your existence, and I don't see anything funny about that, but an existential crisis, according to this definition, is used in a humorous or sarcastic way to suggest that the person or people being described spend too much time thinking about themselves and the meaning of their lives. Well, George Soros says we have an existential threat. Existential crisis, which according to this definition says we spend too much time thinking about ourselves and the meaning of our lives. I know that's bizarre. First time I think I've ever defined anything that way on the radio program, but they're quoting him existential. It's like, what the heck does that word mean? The article says billionaire financier George Soros said the European Union is in an existential crisis. Meaning there's something that's supposed to be humorous or sarcastic, according to one definitional source, and needs to be reinvented in the face of growing threats. Well, it appears when he uses existential crisis, he's using it like existential threat, meaning that the European Union its very existence is in jeopardy. And I think that's what he really meant to say. He goes on, he says the reinvention of the European Union would have to revive the support that the European Union used to enjoy. I would say it had to revive the support of people in the European Union. This is yay, this is great. It would also have to revive their ignorance. It would have to revive their stupidity. Some Soros, he says, such reinvention again, he says, would have to review the past and explain to European citizens what went wrong, and then make proposals to make things right. So Soros is admitting that the European Union has done things improperly, unwisely, imprudently, and is therefore in trouble. Soros continues. He says, Soros said Europe needs to overcome the current existential crisis by fighting together against the rise of anti-European sentiment. I don't think he's fighting anti-European sentiment. He's fighting anti-European Union sentiment. And there's a difference. All right. Xenophobic feelings are fighting against xenophobic feelings, which I think is a rejection of the Muslims and surrounding hostile powers. Soros implies that the European Union is being attacked from both within and without. All right. If you say something, if you live in the European Union, you're not giving it adequate support. The hostile powers that are surrounding, they're threatening to attack, according to him. Is this an objective assessment of the European Union's predicament? Is it evidence of paranoia? Is it evidence that the European Union is so fundamentally flawed and so fragile that it's vulnerable to any mere criticism that emanates from both within and without the European Union? I don't believe the European Union's fundamental problem includes attacks from a host of foreign nations. Instead, I read Soros' complaint as evidence that the European Union is fundamentally and perhaps fatally flawed, and Soros knows it. He's doing damage control before this whole thing blows up in everybody's face. He called for an update of European treaties to make the European Union work better and allow a multi-track block where countries would have wider variety of choices when it comes to integration. What he's saying is the nations are refusing to be integrated with other nations. They want their own culture. They want their own people. They don't want to be invaded by an influx of Muslims from the Middle East or whatever coming out of Africa. They want their own. And he's saying we're going to have to let them have that. Right? He goes on, he says European politicians should not get distracted with the upcoming European Union exit negotiations with Great Britain, and continue their work to regain the trust of European citizens. Soros is admitting that the government, the apparent government of the European Union, has betrayed the trust of European citizens. They know it, and they are therefore rejecting the government of the nascent European Union. Brexit will be immensely damaging process, harmful to both sides. Most of the damage is felt right now when the European Union is in an existential crisis, meaning their existence is being threatened in Europe and Great Britain by bailing out of the European Union. They threaten the existence of the European Union, but its attention is diverted to negotiating the separation from Great Britain. He says the European Union must resist the temptation to punish Britain and approach negotiations in a constructive spirit. It should use Brexit as a catalyst for introducing far-reaching reforms. He's thereby telling us that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Let's jump in here and somehow save the European Union. Well, he's telling us. Soros is implicitly admitting that the European Union is in a lot of trouble. And he's saying something's got to be done to save this thing. And it has to be changed significantly. And that's evidence that as it exists, the European Union is fundamentally flawed. And insofar as Soros is worried about foreign hostile forces that are surrounding the European Union, including Turkey and Russia, and I don't know who all he's got on his list, and the United States of America is listed, he's just saying, I don't think anybody's attacking the European Union to a significant degree. But I think what's really happening is it's so weak that if anyone just stands up who lives in the European Union and says, hey, wait a second, isn't this wrong? Stand up and the consequences can be felt. Small criticism from within and from without the European Union threaten the European Union to a significant degree, if we can believe George Soros or the implications of what he said. So what's it all mean? It means that the European Union, I believe Soros knows what he's talking about, right? means the European Union is in some significant danger. It really is having an existential crisis. It's facing an existential threat to its very existence. And it's just confirmation from a source that a lot of people might say is credible. Right? Soros, you know, I'm not arguing he's a good guy. I think he's a villain. But if he's worried that the European Union is about to fall apart, in danger of disintegrating, I'd say that's a credible possibility. So, Melody, are you going to invest in the European Union?
Well, you know, when it comes to George Soros, you know, when he talks about things and writes about things, I always try to look at the big picture. What is he really trying to accomplish? I don't believe he was like Brzezinski and those when they would write things and so forth. You knew what they were planning on doing, and you know, you could tell what their agenda was and so forth. With Soros, to me, it's like, you know, he says one thing and he wants to push something. He's saying it for a reason. In order, and you know, Britain has elections on the 8th, I believe, June 8th. Prime Minister May, she's having difficulties, and especially after the last terrorist attack that they had, as before she became Prime Minister, I guess she was sort of in charge. Her position was to prevent things like that from happening. So she's having a difficult time, and so we're not sure who they might have for the next prime minister. On the other hand, nobody really cares. It's like you don't hear anybody talking about the Britain's election and what's going to happen to her and so forth and whatnot. So, and I think this is a sign, like he's saying, that you know, the European Union, you know, it's not going to last much longer. And the people,
certainly in danger.
The people never supported the European Union. When I was over there, I asked people, none of them wanted the European Union, but they got it anyway. And they all knew their prices would rise. They all knew everything would become more expensive for them, having the one currency, having the euro. And it's exactly what happened. So I don't think they ever had support. They're just more vocal about ending it now. You know, that they want something different. They've had it because it hasn't worked for them. And people are expressing their displeasure at the politicians. And look at the debt. You know, we always talk about the debt. I mean, Italy's banks, they're about ready to go belly up. You know, I mean, all of them are having financial problems. They're going to have to cut back on their...
But can they?
They're going to have to cut back on their... what word am I trying to think of?
They're going to have to cut back on their stimulus.
On their stimulus, thank you.
Yeah, but whether they can do that and hold it together is questionable.
They're not
we'll
the U.S.
Take a break here for a couple more commercials. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Just a recap on the precious metals today. We have gold up $1 today at $1,268. I'm sorry, it was down $1 at $1,268.60. Silver was down 2 cents today at $1,739. Platinum was down 16 at $936. And palladium was up 8 at $829. We do have a little small package out today. You can buy one or 100, $485, 90% silver, they're quarters, $25 face value, and a 1/10 gold American Eagle. The price includes shipping, $485. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
All right, where do you want to go next, Melody?
To the moon.
Moon.
Speaking of the moon, I know you have something about the IT, and we're kind of a little, you know, talking about different things today, and you have something with the about IT, something
you mean
about
MIT?
AI.
About AI. All right, yeah, you're talking about artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence, but before you do that, I just wanted to do this quick one. That it was released, JetBlue Airways and Delta Airlines, they're going to test facial and fingerprint recognition technology at 2 U.S. airports to replace boarding passes. And they're going to build on this industry to increase security and ease passage through airports. I think this is just, you got to be kidding me. I'll never fly again. The JetBlue program will start next month on flights from Boston to Aruba, Queens Beatrix International Airport. It will match passenger photos to their passport or visa photos. Delta has been trying fingerprint identification in Washington that may eventually replace boarding passes. The testing highlights efforts by carriers, trying to get everybody in and out of the airport. Europe's KLM airline in February began using face scanning technology for boarding at Amsterdam's airport. Everybody thinks technology is great. I've been accused of wanting to live in the Stone Age. Well, you know what? The Stone Age really doesn't sound all that bad. I mean, we have lost so much of our privacy, so much of our freedoms, all to the idea that people just want to have an easier and easier life. The things are really better. And how much technology that they've created today, you can't compare that to the Industrial Revolution. I mean, I think we talked about that on the program.
Yeah, we've talked about it. The big difference is this technology is moving so fast.
Well, it's not even the fastness of the speed. What does it really do? I mean, how does it really better things?
Makes them less expensive and makes them more
really
available.
Less expensive?
Yeah, it does.
Really?
It does, but you can...
What have you seen that has gone down?
Well, like computers. I mean, I can buy a computer for $600.
It's not technology.
The people running the government back when I was a kid, they'd have paid millions of dollars for it.
Technology isn't what made the price go down, Al. It was having it built in China and India that made the price
go
down.
No, this is technology, too. Isn't just China. This isn't
technology
just cheap
labor. Technology made it go faster.
This is something extraordinary.
Technology has made it go faster and maybe a little easier to use. But I don't think it's really brought, it's their ability to manufacture. It's the cost of wages.
Yeah, that's some of it. But even some of the ability to manufacture depends on higher quality and cheaper and less expensive computers to keep the factory organized. I have no doubt that the technology there is a good side to the technology. It's not all bad or anything like that. But there is a dangerous side. Everybody can see the good side. I wonder how many people can see the danger.
But when it comes to our privacy and it comes to our freedoms, I don't think that's good when we lose that. So if everybody wants to get scanned, I mean, you see on television on these where you can send in your DNA. Why would anybody want to send their DNA and find out what blood you have? I mean, we've become so conditioned to believe that all of this stuff is good for us. And I guess maybe society, and I think that's kind of leading up to what you're going to talk about, people really aren't going to care. I mean, I am in a generation where that is important to me. My privacy is important. My freedoms are important.
I know.
And we're losing them. And technology is a big reason why we're losing it.
Turning into a police state. And everybody can point to the technology and say, this is good, this is effective, this will reduce crime, and it might. But it also gives the government extraordinary powers over the people. And you may be less likely to get mugged by some thug walking down the street, but you're maybe going to be more likely to be mugged by your own government insofar as they shut off your bank account or close down your utilities or whatever for your home. Well, there is a kind of potential danger here that maybe it's just a function of paranoia, but I don't think so.
No, it isn't a function.
I don't think we can just sit back and say, we can trust the government. I mean, you know, you can trust the government. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? I mean, I've seen reports from the government about how they dispersed biological agents among cities like San Francisco and other California cities and Chicago and whatever. They run experiments on us, right? And see, I wonder how many of these people will die. We had to have experiments so we'd know if these biological threats were real or not real. And they tried various pockets. This goes back into the 50s and 60s. I mean, you can't. This we have a government that we're just talking about today. If you want to run a committee, you've got to come up with money.
You've
got to have
more
money to be the head of the committee. Where do you get that money? You've got to take bribes.
It's bigger than government.
Oh, I understand.
The picture is bigger than just the government. Yeah. You know, this is the entry into all the things people, you can say end times.
Well, it may be. Maybe it remains to be seen, but you know, I don't doubt I enjoy computers.
On the computer all day long.
I enjoy that, but there is a danger here.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
And so, to me, I just thought that was just really kind of, you know, you'll be going to the airport now and, you know, get your face scanned, fingerprinting. And people, the majority of people will think it's cool. They'll think it's cool. I don't have to stand in line anymore. This is cool.
Exactly. All you got to do is just flash your hand at the scanner at the door and you walk right in. No problem. I get that. And if there's anything wrong with your handprint or whatever, you're out. And not just out, you're maybe arrested and who knows what's going to happen. And that's part of this. It's not just a question of the convenience. It's also a question of inconvenience. You flash your palm print or your fingerprint at a scanner at the door. That's all you do. Just wave and say hi. Essentially, they read it, they let you in, they let the next guy in, they let the next guy in. And all of a sudden, it's your turn to come up there and they don't let you in. And they're not just going to say, go away, we don't recognize you. They're going to say whatever the reason is for not letting you in is the reason you're going to be pulled out of the line and arrested. And this is going to happen without anything like due process. It's not going to happen because we have witnesses who are going to swear under oath that you committed a crime. I mean, this is the kind of potential that's there. And admittedly, it's not going to affect everyone. It will be selective, presumably. And I don't know. It's one of the things that I can't help worrying about. And I don't mean that I dwell on it and I worry every day and oh my God, I'm so fearful. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, look, there's things here that need to be considered and how you balance these questions. Where do we put convenience? Where do we put political threat? How do we balance these?
Al, those are all great questions, but the thing of it is, the general populace out there, they're so herded, they're so conditioned, that there's a few listen to programs like this, who see what's happening, who choose not to enter into that system. And it is a system that, I don't know if it'll be our choice, but it's going to be a system that we're going to have to make a choice. We either want to be part of it or not.
I understand that. And it won't be easy to be outside of the system.
And it will be extremely difficult.
You'll live in poverty and perhaps peril. I don't think there's, even if you haven't done anything. You know, a lot of people object to the system for reasons you mentioned earlier about end times. Mm-hmm. When they talk about, there's verse in the Bible that there will be, take the mark of the beast on your forehead or on your right hand. All right? If you don't take the mark, you won't be able to buy or sell. Well, if you can't buy or sell, where do you get toilet paper? Where do you get food? How can you pay for utilities on your home? You wind up having to live like a homeless bum if you don't have this mark. And what we're looking at in this technology, some people can look at it and say, but this is the beginning of that mark of the beast. This will be done with computers. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I don't know that it's true, false, or whatever, but I understand that it is a legitimate concern.
I do. Personally, I do believe it is true.
Well, a lot
of
people do.
Yeah, I do believe it is true. I mean, we now have the capability for the completion of the verse of the scripture. So, I mean, this is all part of it. And and you have to look at what's next. How can we, and, you know, people say, it'll be easy just to say no. Well, no, you know what? It's not going to be easy. And
what's
a lot
happening?
Of it is mental. You have to condition yourself, your thinking.
Oh, it's, you have to trust people in positions of power. You have rule by man rather than rule by law. Whatever they say, you just have to go along with the program or you'll be pulled out of line and arrested for reasons no one understands.
The thing you have to do is you have to trust God. And again, putting yourself in a position, and I'm going to, even financially. And I do believe gold and silver will also help you to say no and to stay out of that system. So
it's
not going to be
interesting.
When you have have children and grandchildren that are going to be possibly hungry, it's going to, you know, a lot of people, you know, so.
Of course they'll be hungry. Question is whether, of course, that's what kids do. They eat until they
hungrier.
Get through puberty, until they get through puberty, and then they find something else to do with their time besides just eat.
I don't mean that type of hunger. I mean, they'll be hungry. Mm-hmm. There will be no food.
The question is not whether they'll be hungry. They will be. The question is whether you'll be able to provide any food for them. And if you don't have that mark, maybe you can't. And the government is in trouble. You know, they're working. They have been working around the world to get rid of cash. If there's no cash, how do you get any money to buy things in the system? All the money, the currency, is going to be digital. And if you don't have a job that they approve of from a corporation that they approve of that's giving you some sort of a payment that goes onto your into your plastic card in your account, where do you get the currency to pay for your milk or your broccoli or your steak or gasoline for your automobile? You've got to be in that system. If they don't have cash, there's no place for you to be anonymous. And they're going to say, oh, well, the people who want cash, they're just criminals and gangsters and drug dealers. Notice that. No, they're not. We used cash for 2 centuries in this country. And it wasn't evidence that everybody was a gangster. What this is, when you go into a monetary system that the government can monitor digitally, and they know where you are. They know. Did you stop in at the bar? Did you stop in at a topless bar? Did you stop in at a gay bar on the way home? They're going to know. They're going to be able to tell from your little plastic card in your account. They know where you're spending your money. They'll be able to tell who you are. And if they want to push you around a little bit, they'll be able to do that. There won't be secrecy. There won't be anonymity. You won't be able to just deal innocently with other people. You're going to have to think about every single transaction you make. It'll create a paper trail. It won't be something you can conceal. Do you really want to buy a copy of Playboy
magazine? But you know what? We're already there to a point.
Well, I know we're. They know everything that we do. I know that, but I mean, it's we're there. We're close to that, and a lot of people are there insofar as they rely on their plastic, but not everybody does. We still have, there's still a cash environment where you can go out and you can spend cash if you want to, and people don't necessarily know what you're up to.
They're already conditioning people because you mentioned something about, oh, you know, cash is only related to, you know, drug dealers and so forth. But you know what? That is how they're
going. Politicians.
That is how they're going to change over. Sure, we're going to have a collapse of the system as it is, but that's going to be part of the argument. If you remove the cash from society, mm-hmm. it's going to eliminate the drug dealers. It's going to eliminate.
It's just like
and they're already
control.
Conditioning.
We make guns illegal, and then nobody mm-hmm. gets shot.
They're already conditioning.
Except they have gun control in Chicago, and last over the Memorial Day weekend, I think it was 43 people were shot, 4 were killed. Okay, in a city that has gun control. But it doesn't work. The government comes up and they say, we have a brilliant idea and we're here to help you and we're going to make this happen regardless of whether you like it or not. And all they do is disarm people. It's going to be the same thing. You're going to have your money taken away
yep.
from you.
And they'll have to devalue it first because they can't convert your money into digits with all the money that supposedly your accounts read. So they will have to devalue it. It's what they do with every country when they devalue their currencies and they exchange currencies. Well, you know what? We'll give you one of these new ones for 20 of your old ones or 100 of your old ones. Mm-hmm. So that's how they'll be done.
We got to go, folks. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank and Todd, the producer. Bye.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.